President Tong, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to do so.
Now, Australia's Prime Minister this week announced the emissions reduction target that Australia will take to the International Climate Conference in Paris. What was your reaction when you saw Australia's target?
I think it's, let me comment initially on the fact that Australia is actually taking that step to do so. And indeed, that is very welcome. I think the question is, are the targets sufficient? And I think my answer would be that we all would love to have a perfect solution to everything. But at the same time, we all have to begin from the beginning. And I think what Australia has done on this occasion is welcome, particularly from friends and neighbors like ourselves, Tuvalu, who are very vulnerable. So we welcome that. We welcome that rather than no action at all.
But you're disappointed by the sound of it?
I'm not too excited, but I think I am appreciative over the fact that Australia is coming forward. And I think our perception much earlier was that Australia was not interested in doing anything. And so I must say that we welcome this initiative. We hope that over time we would continue to convince Australia as a government, but I think more importantly, Australia as a people, that they need to take greater responsibility, because it is important for other neighbouring countries like us.
You've been urging fellow world leaders and indeed the people of the different countries in the region to take urgent action on climate change for many years now. And this time last year, you were among Pacific Island leaders who converged on Sydney in traditional boats to try to raise awareness about the impact of climate change. Do you feel you're making any headway?
Oh, definitely, definitely. If we rewind a little bit back to Copenhagen in 2009, that story was radically different from the situation today. And so that is we have every reason to be grateful that things are happening. But I think we still have a long way to go. But I think a step forward is better than a step backward or no step forward at all. And so Australia has been taking these small steps forward, particularly with the Lima commitment. And now this commitment, and I think definitely we welcome that. I understand. I've read what the Australian government has done, and I'm not entirely so bigoted. I believe that it's always a balancing act. I think we're in a much more desperate situation than perhaps the government of Australia is willing to acknowledge. We have a serious problem ahead of us. But I think whenever there is movement, there is room for more movement.
How severely is climate change affecting you and your people right now?
Well, I've just come out of Parliament session in order to take this call. And just before I came, I had to respond to the questions about the relocation of a community where the whole village has been washed out. And so they're asking government to assist. And so we are assisting. And so that is definitely a fact that we are living with. What happened to that community, that village, is beginning to happen with other communities. And so I can see that the frequency of that happening over time is increasing. What happened with the Hurricane Pam was a different story. It's much more frightening, and I think I'd always given warning that our most immediate threat may not necessarily from the sea level rise, but from the changing weather patterns.
But you were already...
So Hurricane Pam. Yeah, we don't get hurricanes. We create hurricanes on the equator and we send them down south or north. But for the first time, we've suffered this. And so, again, this was the question that the Member of Parliament from those islands has raised. Can you assist us with water? Because the water remains undrinkable, so we need this. We are lucky that the rain is falling, but we need catchment. In the longer term, we need something to help us with the providing water. So we will be sending desalination plants to these islands. So that is what's been happening. That is our experience. And I think what the concern is, it's becoming more frequent. It's becoming more severe.
So if nothing changes, how long will it be before your country may be completely underwater?
Well, the story has already begun. As I said, communities are beginning to move. More communities will begin to move very shortly. And so it has begun. And I think whether the question you ask is when will it all be underwater, I really don't know. But I can guarantee you that the damage is already beginning, and it will. I believe in within 10, 20 years, certainly within 20 years, we would see a radical change. And I think we cannot really afford to wait that long. We have to begin to act now.
You've already been buying land in other countries. Do you think that Kiribati can be saved, or have you given up on it?
No, I think Kiribati must be saved. I believe Kiribati must be saved. We cannot allow our total disappearance from the face of this earth as being an option. So we are committed to doing that, but the reality is that whatever we do, we will never have the resources. And the international community has not up to now been able to make a commitment that the resources will be provided in order for us to maintain all of the islands above seawater. And so we have to plan, make contingency planning, with the possibility that the assistance will not be forthcoming in the scales that are required. But our commitment, and I think I'm sure we can generate the resources, our commitment is to ensure that the land of Kiribati does not disappear entirely. If the rest of the islands disappear, we will try to maintain at least a few islands so that Kiribati will not disappear from the face of the earth.
But you're already seeing some islands submerged underwater.
We are already seeing parts of most islands submerging underwater, yes.
And they're quite radical solutions that you're looking at. I mean, you're talking about buying land, and I think at one point you were talking about having floating islands.
Well, this is unprecedented. I really would like to have somebody come forward and give us alternatives. At the moment, we don't have a lot of options. And what's happening is unprecedented. Nobody's been coming forward, and I challenge people. You know, if you think you've got a better solution, please come, because we need this. So far, these are radical, but they really are the only ones available at the moment.
So how, for example, would a floating island work?
Well, I've never lived on a floating island, quite frankly, but I've had people, large corporations, come forward with ideas, but I must say that we are interested because we don't really have a lot of options. And what would life be? I'm assured that it's... I prefer not to live on a solid land rather than a floating island. I cannot see myself or people living on a floating island, but I think if that is the option in the future, then we have to be ready to make a lot of changes in our lives, in the way we live. So my answer to the question, I really don't know what it would be like to live on a floating island, but I can guarantee you, I'd rather live on a floating island and swim for the rest of time.
Is it too late for solutions like building bigger seawalls?
No, we are actually doing that in some of the areas that are continue to be inundated. So we are building what we believe are more solid seawalls. We've got a spring tide coming, king tide coming at the end of this month. Something like what caused a lot of damage at the beginning of this year and last year. And so we're trying to prepare for that, but it's hugely expensive, hugely expensive. But I think what I would like to be able to do is actually get people with technical expertise to recommend options for us in terms of technical engineering solutions, because at the moment we really don't. We're just going ahead, just building concrete walls which will stop the tide when it comes next at the end of this month.
And you are also buying land in other countries like Fiji. That must be expensive as well.
Well, it's, everything is expensive. Life is going to be very expensive for us in the future. But yes, I'm trying to cover all possible options. And so sometimes I'm criticized, sometimes I really don't know how I'm being taken. But I am serious about trying to ensure and guarantee the security of our people into the future. And so buying land in Fiji at the moment is about food security. And I've had a lot of journalists, media people like yourself asking me, so you're going to relocate your people there? My answer has always been, I will not be doing that. which would be true, but it doesn't preclude anybody else in the future doing that. But I think I understand that there are political sensitivities about doing that. But at the same time, it's about getting people to understand that this is a highly moral issue, and it's challenging the moral responsibility of people, including Australians. And so what I'd like to do is hope that the Australian people will see, understand what it is we are going through, what we will be going through, and find a way to perhaps to provide leadership to the government rather than wait for leadership by the government on this one. Because I believe people with the capacity have the moral responsibility to act on this.
You say it's a moral responsibility, but you have been warning of it for years. What realistically do you hope from this year's UN climate conference?
Well, the conference in Paris at the end of this year, it will not deal with all of the issues, but I hope that it will address the most fundamental issues. I hope that it's important that we have a document which binds people in some legal manner. Because at the moment, this is why I'm saying it's a moral responsibility, because there is no legal obligation, because there is no law in place. And I think that is a sad thing, because laws are written because they are based on moral justice. And so, surely, the science is quite clear on this. And surely, we know what we should be doing about this. And so, let's not turn away from that responsibility. As responsible human beings, we should be doing something about it.
Do you think that anything that the rest of the world does at Paris will in fact save Kiribati?
Well, I've been working. I've been going back and forth. I've been liaising with... I've visited capitals in Europe, different parts of the world. I believe there will be more progress in Paris than that there has ever been. And I'm quite optimistic that there will be an agreement, not entirely the best that we would have, but I'm in favor of an agreement so that we can acknowledge our moral responsibility, our legal responsibility. Then we can work from there to address the details. But I believe what the problem has been is trying to address the details too early in the piece when we haven't had a basic agreement accepting that we have to do something about it. So I really am hopeful. Again, I think the focus will be on carbon emissions. It may be the focus may be on the temperature rise, but the reality for us, and I keep making this point, is that all of that will be of no consequence for us, because according to the science, what's already in the atmosphere will ensure that the sea level will continue to rise and will affect the future survival of our people if we do not do anything about it, or if the international community, or if friends like Australia do not assist us.
So even if the international community acts now, the sea level will continue to rise to the point where it inundates your homeland?
That is the science. Absolutely, that is the science. And that's been my point all of this time. They say, yes, let's have an agreement in Paris, but don't forget that we need special provisions. If they cannot be provided, then we are facing a very insecure future.
You say that Kiribati is like the canary in the coal mine for climate change. At what point do you think leaders in Australia and other developed countries will sit up and take notice?
I don't know. Sometimes I'd like to pray to God to say, you know, why don't you show them a demonstration to make the message that this is happening. And I know, but the reality is people don't feel things. We see them on television, but we don't feel it. And I would like to invite all of these people to come here to see what it is that we have to contend with. And there is a certain sense of insularity. You know, you get far away, you're not affected. And of course, for Australia, the sea level rise is not a real issue, because you've got a lot of land to move up to. We don't. So this is why I've always appealed to the moral conscience of people, that as human beings, we must see the need to do something about what is happening. Because after all, we do have made a contribution to making it happen.
You also say that you've been calling for technical support. Is it possible that there could be an international mechanism to compensate people like you who are the worst affected by climate change?
Rather, unfortunately, it's always the governments that make these decisions. And the governments, it's about politics. I know that in Australia right now, what has been why the government has been hanging back on this, because it's different. When the Labor government was in, it was all for it. And now with the change of government, it's about politics. And I think the point that I'd always been making is it's not about politics, it's not about economics. It's about survival, not only of those countries like us on the front line, but it's about the survival of the planet into the future. But if we take the attitude that, no, it will not affect us, and definitely that is true for Australia. But the reality is, it is already affecting us. The question is, do you care, or should you care, or should you not?
And I guess the question is, how do you answer those who say, why should Australia accept responsibility for saving nations like yours?
Because they are responsible for having made it happen. And in any case, I believe that people, countries with the capacity, have the moral obligation to provide support. You don't ever call yourself a Christian if you don't believe that.
I'm just now wondering about, you know, the worst case scenario. This is your home. How traumatic would it be for you to imagine that it could, in a decade or so, be underwater?
Well, I don't have to imagine, because I've got young grandchildren, and that would be the reality for them. Okay? I tried to imagine, and already I cannot think of how it would be to be so dislocated. Maybe the young people are more adaptable, but it's so sad that we would lose something that is our homeland, what we believe to be beautiful, and it's part of this world. And I've been questioned, you know, you seem to find it easy to say what you're saying, and I can guarantee you it's not easy. But I must assure you that I have to find the solutions. This is my responsibility as a leader for my people. And the solutions, the options, I can guarantee you are not the most ideal, but those are the only ones available to us. So the questions will be, what happens to the culture? What happens to the identity? Well, the truth is, I don't know the answer to that, because I will not be directly affected, but it will be for the next generation and the next.
And I guess, like any community, your culture is closely connected to your land.
Absolutely. I mean, we are a spiritual people. I don't know where our spirits will go when the land is drowned, but yes, we have very close connections to the land. We don't have a lot of it. This is why we find it so precious. And if it's going to go, what would it mean to our sense of identity, to our culture? I really don't know.
I guess the hard thing for you too, as the leader there, is that you have to make decisions, as you say, that are in the best interests of your people, and that might indeed include saying, well, we need to give up on developing this land now. We need to now focus on somewhere in the future like Fiji, where we'll have to live.
Yeah, my task again is making the difficult decisions. I can assure you that I'm criticized because there's a deep sense of denial. They will not accept this. But I've got to be very brutally realistic. Brutally realistic, because we've got to be realistic in all of this. You know, we cannot say that we will continue to live here. I know some of my colleagues around the region, they say, it doesn't matter the water, the sea level can rise, but we will never leave our islands. Of course, that is what we want to do. But the question is it doable? Is it achievable? Will the people with the capacity to assist, who should be obliged, who have the responsibility to assist, will they come forward? We don't have the answer, because up to now, and I keep challenging the international community, when I attend these meetings, up to now, nobody has come up with an answer. I'd love to be able to come back from one of these meetings to say, yes, to my people, don't you worry, because the international community has pledged that much amount of resources so we can build our islands and we can live into the future in peace.
But that hasn't happened.
Not yet. I keep hoping. but it's a lot of words. I mean, I remember when I started talking about this issue, nobody else was talking about it. And now everybody's talking about it. So what I'm saying, okay, so we're all talking about it. Now let's do something about it. And so we should be doing something about it. And when we keep doing the opposite of what should be done in order to achieve what it is we're talking about in terms of the climate change.
President Tong, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck in your campaign.
Yes, good. Thank you for having given me the opportunity. And of course, I appeal to all Australians to give leadership, not only to the government. You know, maybe political leadership needs leadership from the people to say, yes, we feel that maybe you should be doing more for those people up there. So that is my appeal to Australians, to give guidance to your political leaders.